This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better? Or can we make them weird? And this week, it's time for the cha-cha. We're talking about Dirty Dancing from 1987. It's directed by Emile Ardolino and written by Eleanor Bergstein, who based it around her own experience in the Catskills as a young adult, including that she was called Baby by her family.
Yep.
It was the top rental video of 1988. The soundtrack spent 18 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200. It went platinum 11 times, sold more than 32 million copies worldwide.
Holy cow.
Yep. And I would bet that, like, if we checked the exact number now, it would be more.
Yeah.
And the song I've Had the Time of My Life won an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and a Grammy, and probably a ton of other awards as well. And yes, there is, of course, a musical.
Of course there is.
Which I'm completely okay with, to be honest.
Yeah.
So you had never seen this movie, which I didn't know when I suggested it.
I had never seen Dirty Dancing. Well, now I have, but I had never seen Dirty Dancing.
How does one manage that?
The same way...
As a married millennial.
The same way one manages, and I'm really outing myself right now, to have never seen The Princess Bride. You absorb the entire movie through drips and drabs and cultural osmosis. So, like, I had a sense of what this movie was about. I knew the kind of iconic finale. I knew Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner. I knew the watermelon thing. But that's kind of it. And yeah. Princess Bride, I think I've seen probably... more fully because I've seen bits and pieces all in random settings. So I've probably seen the whole movie. I just don't know that I've ever sat down and watched it start to finish. But this one was a new one for me.
Did it, like, was it what you figured it was?
Did you have as
complete a knowledge of it as you thought you did?
No, I did. I absolutely did not have... Literally the first thing I realized was, oh, this is an 80s movie set in the 60s. So I didn't even recognize that it was a period piece. So I just, because you hear the iconic and that is so 80s, you know, the tinkling and everything. And
yeah,
so,
a lot of it is very like 80s does 60s.
Absolutely.
Which
like
I
the
love.
Hair. The hair
the
is
hair,
so 80s.
So much of the outfits. I feel like it's kind of a sort of sister movie to Grease. That, like, it's just like these coded periods where, and I mean, almost all kinds of period movies are going to be read through the time when it's made. Like, the 70s Gatsby is very different from the 2000s Gatsby. And that's
right.
A given. And sometimes it's because of choices by the costumer. Sometimes it's because of, like, what works at that time. How stupid can we make 1830s hair without completely losing the audience's attention?
Right.
Because Grease also does not feel like a solely a clean 50s type movie.
No. Yeah. And this is not going for, like, a Marvelous Mrs. Maisel at the Catskills authenticity or a Mad Men authenticity. This is... A nod to the 60s.
What I think is funny, because I read that their, like, initial intended audience was, like, teenagers, young adults.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, what the story about. But it did surprisingly well with adults, like adults, old adults.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's maybe, if that played into it, where they were like, these kids were, like, you know, at most born in the 60s or not alive in the 60s.
Right.
And we want the movie to feel cool to them. And, like, we can just sort of sprinkle the stuff that they'll associate
with
it. Well,
the crazy thing I was thinking about as I was watching this, like, when it dawned on me, okay, this is in 87, probably filmed in, like, 86 or 85, set in 63. And so it would be, like, doing a movie today that is set in the year 2000. And I was like,
I don't like that.
I don't like that. So that totally caught me off guard. Like the setting. And then, I mean, should we just get into a summary?
Yeah. What is this movie about, AJ?
The heat is in the music. The music sets you dancing. The dancing sets her free. Best Wrong Pictures presents Dirty Dancing. She thought it would be just another summer vacation.
Who's that?
Oh, them. They're the dance people.
But it turns out to be the time of her life.
Watch me now!
I can't even do the merengue.
He teaches her what she can do.
All right, so Baby and her family are Baby's. I don't know. They never say how old she is. I don't think. But she's
17 or 18 because she's going off to Mount Holyoke in the fall.
Right. So she's a teenager, even though she's not really a teenager in the way a lot of the teenagers in this movie are not really teenagers. And they go off. Her family goes off to this wealthy Catskills resort, and while she's there. At this resort, they have these. They hire professional dancers as like entertainment, and I had to wrap my head around it. But I had to think of it like a cruise ship. This is a cruise ship, right? So you go, you're going there for the entertainment. And I was like, okay, that's why I have the dancers.
I mean, I could see them also having like, you know, a chess champion to teach the chess classes, like that kind of thing. I'm sure they have a puzzle champion somewhere. Oh, as yeah. Well.
All these things to keep these old rich white people entertained.
All these old rich Jewish people.
Oh, yes. So one night Baby discovers through happenstance that there is this kind of underground thing that happens at night where all the young people at the club get together and they dirty dance.
Like all the crew, not the, like, all the actual crew. Yes, visitors.
Yes. Not
yeah,
like
my
the
brain
kids.
Immediately when you said underground, I was like, but it's up the stairs. What do you
it's
mean?
It's up the stairs. It's up at the top of the hill. Yeah. But it's like this, nobody really knows about it. It's kind of a secret. All the young staff knows about it. But so one night, as Baby is being courted by one of the young men at the resort, she discovers Patrick Swayze's dance partner, and she needs to have an abortion. And Baby borrows money from her dad, who is a doctor, to help her get the abortion secretly. He doesn't know. Dad doesn't know. So she decides, Baby decides that she's going to step in as Patrick Swayze's dance partner to help him do this big show-stopping dance because, of course, his partner now can't. And so the first half of the movie is a lot of training, a lot of learning how to dance. And then they have the dance where I literally was like, wow, this movie is short. Because I thought that was the end. And they can't do the iconic lift at the dance. And so they go back to training. More drama happens. The dance partner gets her abortion. It goes badly. Baby gets her dad to come help her recover. Dad gets pissed. Dad decides, we're leaving. Baby and her sister, who are sister's going to sing in the final night performance. And that is one of my favorite scenes in the movie is her rehearsing.
The Houlihana.
Oh my God, the Houlihana. And they found an actress who is just tone deaf enough or could just play just tone deaf enough that, like, you can imagine people told her she could sing.
She apparently wrote most of that song.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Because, like, I could see people telling her, like, oh my God, you have such a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And her believing that. So, yeah, anyway, Patrick Swayze, he gets, kind of gets outed for his role in the whole, oh my gosh, there's so much that happens in this movie. Also, the guy who got the girl pregnant is now dating the sister. So, Patrick Swayze kind of gets in trouble for his role in all of this. He gets kicked out of the resort. He drives away in a huff. And then on the final night's performance, they're doing a big old-timey thing. And then Patrick Swayze comes back and he's like, I always have the last dance. Nobody puts Baby in a corner. And they dance, and then he lifts her, and it's iconic. And then the boyfriend who got the girl pregnant, the dad is going to give him some money to, like, I don't know, go to med school or something. And then he realizes who he is and what he did, and he got the girl pregnant. The dad takes the check back. It's, oh my God, Julia, I love this movie.
I'm so glad. But it's funny, too, because I watched it, or rewatched it, obviously, with my husband. He was like, I've seen this, I think, once. Because you and he are contemporaries in that he is 6 months younger than I am.
Yeah.
But he was like, I think I've seen it once, but I think it's more, like you were saying, like osmosis.
Yeah.
And he was like, I didn't remember the abortion thing. I didn't remember a ton of this. And he was also like, is this good? Because I feel like I kind of liked that you were seeing it for the first time, because like seeing it as an adult man for the first time and with your like thinking cap. Because like for me, you know, I'm a girl born after, I don't know, 1935 maybe is like the age range here. And this movie is like, you know, it's part of my genetic code, almost.
Yeah.
He also asked me, like, is this movie, like, is it as big a deal in, like, other parts of the world as it is for Swedish girls? And I was like, yes, 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 it is. This is not just a weird thing that we do over here. And what I, spoiler, I really think it holds up.
Oh, it totally holds
up. Not just holds up, like, for me rewatching it, but holds up as a movie that is, you know, 30 years old, over 30 years old. Like, there are small parts where I can be like, I have little issues with parts of this plot, whatever. But it doesn't feel horribly dated or uncomfortable.
No, no.
Which is impressive.
Yeah, it's really impressive. And particularly for a movie that is also set in the 60s. I mean, you could start to pick it apart and kind of talk about how white the movie is, right? And how it doesn't address any of the... It has some black actors as, like, the crew.
And they reference...
And the staff.
They reference freedom riders. So, like, there is... They are right. Acknowledging the civil rights movement. But it also, like, it makes sense that there wouldn't be any black people at this super fancy upper middle class Jewish resort. But I appreciate that, for instance, I don't think there's one slur in this movie. Like, not a slur towards Jews, towards black people, about possibly, like, gay rumors or anything. Like, the closest you get is, you know, that kind of girl, which is more, which is a class thing, but there's still no slur there. I don't think they even use the word slut.
No.
They just say sleeps around. And I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because it would have been really easy to either to show what the 60s were like, or to not even reflect on it in the 80s, just like, you know, throw lots of words around. And I'm kind of impressed that they don't.
Yeah, I would also agree. Like, as somebody seeing it for the first time in 2020 with 2020 lens on, the two biggest takeaways I had from this movie was this movie totally holds up. And, oh my God, this movie is so horny.
Right? That was the other thing my husband, he was like, I do not remember them... you know, them sleeping together this much. And I was like, oh, no, they're just sharing a bed. Nothing happened because it's the 60s.
This is a horny ass movie. There is a lot of just like looking and touching.
But yeah, and that's, I think, what made it, maybe part of what made it so successful with both a young and an old audience, that there's very little explicit sex. Most of it is implied, like just morning after. And then there's tons of
dirty dancing.
Exactly. I was like thinking of any way to say it. Like, and it's so like, it's, you know, it's very sensual and it feels very safe.
Yeah.
Like in a way that is very attractive to a woman of any age, I think. And like, and the dancing is so good too. And I read that the director, he apparently didn't want another flash dance on his hands. So he only wanted actual experienced dancers. He was like, I want dancers who can act because I don't want to have to use body doubles.
Yeah. Well, we watched the, a few months ago, we watched the, there's a movie, behind the scenes kind of special on Netflix with every episode is a different kind of classic movie.
Oh, it's like movies that shaped us or something.
Yeah. And the first one is Dirty Dancing. And, we watched that while I was like, I don't know, playing Animal Crossing or something. So I wasn't really paying attention, but I do recall that, you know, Patrick Swayze was a dancer. And I also do recall that him and Ferris Bueller's sister did not get along.
No, they had been in Red Dawn together and like apparently had conflicts there. Yeah. And they got over them enough to do a really good screen test.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just like, they just started sniping each other with every scene. And then I like the director told a story that he made them watch the screen test to be like, you guys had chemistry. You can do this.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that.
Well, they do. And they have a contentious relationship too. So like, there's that scene where she's like, you know, she comes down on him for being such an aggressive teacher. And I guess he was also kind of like that just in, you know, when they would be shooting. He was very, mm-hmm. you know, controlling and demanding about how she was dancing.
Yeah, that armpit tickle scene is apparently just her not being able to shoot the scene.
Yeah.
So every look of frustration he has is actually Patrick Swayze, not Johnny Castle. Yeah.
But when she, like, comes back at him and stands her ground, like, yeah. that's powerful.
Yeah, that I'm saving your ass. Yeah. I totally want to drop you on it.
That's great.
Yeah. Because, yeah, she is, and I really appreciate that, like, he sees that after a while to be like, yeah, it might seem that she just ran to her daddy, but she is willing to give up stuff, even if it's just, like, comfort. But, like, she wants to do stuff, and she will try to get there, yeah. I guess. I think it's so funny, like, because this movie really is just such a pillar stone of modern culture, not just, like, girly culture, though it is that, or, you know, romantic comedy. Just like, this is almost, I think, like, a universal thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you had a pretty good idea of what it was about. There's a reference to it in tons of popular culture. You have, like, nobody puts baby in a corner, which is a line that Swayze apparently hated. This is my dance space. This is your dance space. I do a lot of waving of that when I think people are being annoying. I do the arms.
Carried a watermelon.
Yeah, I carried a watermelon. And I just, it's cool that a movie that really, like, there's not that much there, you know? There's not tons of discussion about civil rights. There's not, like, it's a sweet summer romance movie, but it just, like, it hits something. I found this amazing quote in an interview with The Guardian in 2006. Eleanor Bergstein talked about the movie's popularity with people in the former Eastern Bloc. Quote, "And in Russia, it's policy in the battered women's shelters when a woman comes in for help. First, they wash and dress her wounds. Then they give her soup. Then they sit her down and show her dirty dancing. When the Berlin Wall came down, there were all these pictures of kids wearing dirty dancing t-shirts. They were saying, we want to have what they have in the West. We want dirty dancing." Which is funny because it's like, yeah, you're going to need that 30-year sort of,
yeah.
or 20-30 year to catch up on. But it's just like, because it is, it's not just comfort food. It's not just like this. It has real heart, I think.
And it's really feminist. Like, it shows strong women, like, and
she was named for the first, she was named for the first woman in the cabinet, just like Eleanor Bergstein was named for Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm. And, like, that says something about her parents too, like the way she's been raised. And yeah, no, it's a very good, all right.
Even when the dad discovers what baby's been up to and they're sitting there at breakfast, he goes, well, I want to leave. And the sister says, I don't want to leave. And the mom says, well, why do you want to leave? And he's like, fine, we won't leave. Like, I love that he's like, I'm the dad. I'm putting my foot down. Oh, okay. The women in my family don't want to leave. All right, we're staying. I'm like, I love that.
Yeah. I think it's also like he can't, in the spur of the moment, think of a good reason why.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, and the parents, they don't even play that huge a part, but they're great. Like, they're...
Yeah.
And... it's because I think when I rewatched this, like, the second time, I was like, that's the mom from Gilmore Girls, because that's, like, the span of time that had
that's
been...
That's what it was. I couldn't place her. All right.
Yeah, Kelly Bishop. Like, it might have been the third time, but whatever. The time between the last time I had watched it, I had watched all of Gilmore Girls, like, live as it was being shown. And it's just so funny how she went from this, like, you know... a Jewish doctor's wife to this waspy, but basically still kind of the same character. Yeah. It's just, it's so great. And Jerry Orbach went on to solve murders all over. I'm trying to think now, like, is there a trope in this movie? And I feel like the trope, I mean, a little bit, like, you know, love across class lines,
yeah.
or summer romance, or... you know, finding your sexuality through dance. But really, I'm just like, no, the trope is it's a good movie.
Yeah, well, I think all of those tropes apply. It's also like the dance remake of Karate Kid, right? You know,
and a little bit it's also a story of a very, like, a change, very much like the times are a change in, because, like, the end, you have that little monologue from the resort director. He's like, everything is changing. The kids don't want to do this.
But in here we stay, you know. Like, as soon as he's done saying that...
Locked in 1952.
Yeah, he comes back out, like, he has that little monologue, and then he comes right back out, and they're doing this old-timey, like...
And also, like, a change for a baby. Like, she really grows mm-hmm. up in that summer and, you know, sees what she might have to deal with in the Peace Corps, maybe. Do we care about the main couple? I feel like every question I'm going to have is a rhetorical question here.
I mean, I do.
Like, here's one of my tiny gripes is...
Okay.
I'm just going to assume that she's 18. I also don't know what, like, the statutes were in
right.
New York in the 60s. But
in the 60s.
So, like, she's 18. He's about 25. And it's not wrong. And it's, you know, but part of me is just like, as a 25-year-old, what do you get from an 18-year-old? But then also, like, he's had a very hard life and maybe hasn't had much time to, like, grow. He's just had to keep himself afloat. But either way, like, that's where I'm just like, but 25 and 18 is still, like, it's a big gap because those are some very formative years. But at the same time, it's not as wide a gap as you see in many other romantic movies. So I'm like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like the relationship because it feels like it doesn't feel, their conflict doesn't feel forced and their attraction doesn't feel forced. It all feels like it all comes, like, it all is earned.
Yeah, because when they're, like, when in the beginning when he's being mean to her, like, all of his experiences have made him sort of very qualified to make that statement. It's wrong in this case.
Right.
And then when they're fighting over the dancing, that's just, like, practical stuff in the moment. They're not mm-hmm. at loggerheads as people. It's just that, like, this is a very weird... And it is a very good way to fall in love while you have to, you know, save the skate park or whatever.
Yeah. And I also like that, you know, as he's the experienced dancer and as somebody who's done theater for so many years, like... I've worked with directors who have that brusque, direct, like, it's not my preferred way to work, but I know that that is how people in the performing arts work occasionally, is it is brusque and direct and, like, I'm telling you exactly what I need.
And I could see also, because if he, you know, has classes at the resort, he probably spends most of his teaching time being super smarmy, because he has to be. Like, he's paid for...
Yeah.
Even if we don't consider the, you know, the other services he provides for the ladies of the resort,
yeah.
just that, like, he has to really suck up to them because he needs this job. He needs to be able to come back. So he probably, mm-hmm. like, he probably isn't allowed to tell them they're doing something wrong. He has to find other ways to correct them. Mm-hmm. So here is, like, this is the way that he would train someone that just needs to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't have time to make it flowery.
Yeah. And it's not anything, it's not like this is whiplash. You know, it's not like that level of demanding. He's just, he's telling her exactly what he needs from the dance. But I do like that she stands up to him. And it makes their conflict, it makes their relationship very believable. Yeah, I care about the couple.
Yeah, I care about them as people and I care about them as a couple.
Yeah.
What about the side characters? I love this ensemble too. Like, everyone is just, because there aren't that many people who have, like, big side parts. That not there.
Yeah, I get you.
Supporting parts. There aren't, like, that many big supporting characters. It is very much focused on this tiny group, but everyone is just so good. Like, Penny mm-hmm. is wonderful. She feels incredibly 80s, but I love her.
Yep.
She's like, again, her snapping at baby feels completely justified in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then she admits, like, that she was wrong and she's grateful. And, like, I hate Robbie, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Of course he gives her the fountainhead, which is, like, it's just hilarious. Of course.
I missed this in the movie, but my wife called him Robbie the Creep. Did anyone refer to, is he referred to as that in the movie, or is that just her name for him?
I think baby refers to him as such.
Okay. Because I might have missed that, and she was like, "Oh, Robbie the Creep." I was like, "He has that entire name. I love it."
What I really love about that penultimate scene that you were talking about, where the dad is going to give him some money, I love that they've written it so that it's not that the dad finds out; it's that Robbie doesn't even reflect on mentioning it, because he's like, "This is what men do."
Right. Yes.
Like, thank you for taking care of this. Sort of like he would have said, you know, thanks for picking up my dry cleaning or whatever. Because to him, it's like, this isn't weird. This isn't wrong.
Wasn't an inconvenience for him.
And that is, it's a small detail, but it's a very, very good one about who Robbie is.
That's a really good point.
And I think the dad picks up on that too.
Yeah.
That A, I think he also like when, because Robbie says, I thought baby told you. And I think that dad also kind of appreciates, maybe he's a little saddened by, but maybe appreciates that baby and Johnny didn't like defend anything by pointing fingers. They were just like, okay, whatever. But that the dad realizes that Robbie was not just the guilty party here. He's also an asshole.
Yes. And Robbie's a good villain, I guess, right? But also Newman's in this.
This was his first big part.
Oh my God. I was like, Newman.
Right. And it's funny because he has one of those faces that just doesn't age.
Yeah.
Like, he's just this vague, like, for everything he's ever done for the past, you know, 30, 40 years. He's somewhere between, like, 35 and 55.
Yeah.
Unspecifically. And as a fellow fatty, I'm like, that's the benefit. It fills out all the wrinkles. You just can't figure it out. I still get carded sometimes.
Oh, that must be nice. The bags under my eyes are keep me nice and old looking.
Yeah. And cause it's, I kind of like that. Robbie is definitely the villain, but you have like shifting antagonists throughout the movie. Like who is the obstacle? Who is the threat?
Yeah.
Which is also like a nice structural thing. Like the dad is somewhat of an antagonist because he, you know, he pushes baby away because he's disappointed based on what he thinks happened and so on.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite character?
Oh man. I mean, there's a lot of good ones. I think. It's probably baby, but close second would be her sister. because she's just sad
that she didn't get to bring her coral shoes.
Yeah.
So, such a nice little detail that I've forgotten. The mom's like, but you brought 10 pairs.
Yeah. Well, and I love a movie that can, it's not easy to show a bad performance that is almost good. Do you know what I mean? It's that is such a very specific kind of performance. It's, you know, you look at something like 30 Rock, and I think part of the joke in 30 Rock is the show they're producing is bad, right? The SNL, the version of SNL in that show is bad. Waiting for Guffman, the play is bad. And her performance, like I mentioned earlier, it's, you can totally imagine her friends and family telling her how talented she is, how great a voice she has. And she's so close.
Exactly. Like, cause she's not horrible throughout the whole thing.
Right.
It's just that either she can't quite, she doesn't have that range, or she just doesn't manage to hit it and doesn't understand. Like, and that's, like you're saying, like, that's even harder to be decent, verging on bad, rather than bad, bad.
Yeah.
And it's always funny to see when someone plays someone who's really good at something in a movie, but they have to go through the training montage. It's hard to be bad at ice skating if you're really good at ice skating.
Yeah.
Or singing or whatever. So yeah, I totally agree. I kind of like Johnny's cousin, the guy who has three watermelons to start with. Because he's just like, she's here with me. She's with me. And he's just like, he's this, I don't know what you would call like a completely friendly Puck character who just like kind of carries the story along, doesn't interfere much, but he's just like, he's kind of the Greek chorus almost, like making sure that stuff goes in different ways. And he's so sweet because you can tell like for about 8 minutes, he's thinking that maybe he's gonna get to like have a little flirtation with this cute young girl. Cause nope. I'm reading him as also like 18, 19.
Yeah.
So, and like, he's not skeezy about it. He's just like, she's cute, you know? And, but then he's like, all right. So he just keeps being around helping to do stuff.
Yeah.
And also filling in stuff where Johnny and Penny are too, you know, upset or busy with something else or don't really see baby as an adult yet. He's the one who can fill in information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I just like him because he's so hapless.
Yeah.
Do you have a least favorite character?
I mean, the creep, but that's just because you're meant to dislike him. But I don't really have a character that I like either cringed at the acting or at the person or, you know, there's not a character that I didn't like that the movie didn't want me not to like. Is that right? That's a lot of double negatives, but...
No, that makes sense. It just occurred to me that the old kleptomaniac in My Life in Ruins feels like sort of born from this... stealing old couple.
Oh yeah, yeah. I love it because like his wallet's good. Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
Do you have a favorite part? I love all the dirty dancers, as I think they're credited, like the staff.
Yes.
Because I'm assuming also that this is all the staff that's non-visible. Like they clean, they cook. They're not the waiters. They're not the entertainers for the most part, and they just want to like, they're just having fun. And this dancing is so. Like, it's very well choreographed because it feels very natural. And it's so funny when she's walking through with her watermelon and they're just like, all right. Because she's so out of place.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just like even the characters that aren't really characters are so great.
And I mean, that's that scene, too, when she goes in there. This is one of those fun things about the movie is it mixes the... anachronistic stuff in very liberally. So when she walks in, they're all dancing to the twist, which I have never thought of that as like a sexy song. And suddenly I'm like, oh, like this is a steamy room that she's walking into. It's a steamy, smelly room. And it is so like there's so much sexuality within the dancing. And then here she is kind of stumbling through the room with her watermelon and everyone's giving her these looks. It's just so good.
And it's because they're not even hostile. Like no. They're not really giving her the stink eye. They're just like, okay. And a little bit, I think, you know, they're also worried.
Yeah.
Because they don't know if she's a decent person. Right. They're just like, are we going to get in trouble? It's also funny when Swayze says, or when Johnny says, you know, I've been working on something with the kids and the staff kids. And it's so funny because it's like, you know, they all just want to maybe do a fun dance thing, even though that's not what they're there to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, everyone is great in this movie, pretty much. Yeah. Do you have a favorite part?
I mean, I think it's got to be the end. although I did really like the training montage where they're dancing on the log because that felt very Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And also... my brain just immediately went to, if you can dance on a log, you can dodge a ball for no reason.
Fair.
And then it made me realize like, oh, we wouldn't have Dodgeball if it weren't for Dirty Dancing. Not that Dodgeball's a good movie, but no, I think that, I mean, the ending is so good. Like it's so iconic. It's when everything kind of comes together. The dance is fun. The dance is great. I also saw in that documentary show that, when they were shooting him jumping off the stage, they did like 30 takes and his knees were just giving out by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And he told him, and they just kind of didn't have it. And he's like, I have one more in me. So like, turn all the cameras on. I'm going to do this one more time. And that's the one that they used, which I love those kinds of stories.
Yeah. And I love that he had in his audition sheet, he had no dancing on there because he'd been injured, but it still said that he'd been like part of the Joffrey Ballet or whatever. Yeah. So he hurt himself a bunch of times, you know, falling off that log and doing the jumps and stuff. And I would assume like everybody hurt themselves over and over again because doing the lifts and everything. Apparently a bunch of extras fainted because it was so hot when they were shooting parts of it.
Oh, I can't imagine. Like, particularly if they did actually shoot it in the summer in the Catskills indoors with lights and big crowds. Oof, that must have been...
And they had to do some reshoots in the fall and they got to spray paint the leaves green.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is really cute.
Yeah, no, that lift at the end, I will say, that is an impressive lift. I'd seen it before, but like, I guess it just... Like, the movie... did exactly what its thesis was on me, right? Whatever that means. Like the movie was, took me along for the ride so that by the end when they do that lift and he just holds her and it lingers there and you're like, he's just still holding her. Like, and it's just this moment of stillness. It was like, whoa.
And I think it's really good that they have the in the training montage that they're in the lake because it shows like how little counterbalance you need to just like fall over.
Yeah.
because it's, you know, it's the catching and stopping her so that she doesn't just keep keep going. And yeah, no, the lift is amazing. I think I have friends. I was at a wedding where they did the whole dance routine at the end. They did it as their like first dance. And yeah, I think a lot of people are just like, I want to be lifted and fly.
Yeah. Our choreography for our first dance, we had like two lifts in that, and I am not a dancer. And then my mother-in-law organized a flash mob at our wedding, which was, I was supposed to participate, and I told her, I was like, I'm already trying to learn our first dance. There's no way. I'm not going to learn two choreographed dances. But yeah, I can see people doing this at their weddings all the time.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, again, like as just being who I am, I'm like, the whole movie is my favorite part.
I get that. You know,
it is. Like, I feel like any flaws it has in, like, you know, little pieces of dialogue or direction, I'm like, yeah, but that's kind of like intrinsically, inextricably part of it. Like, that makes it more charming somehow.
Yeah.
Which is very, very bad film criticism, I know.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you, just watching it, I mean, it probably helped that I had a couple glasses of whiskey beforehand, but, I didn't really find flaws, as it were. I was like, this movie is like, it's kind of a Swiss watch. You know, it's
that all the parts just like ticking along.
Yeah.
And moving smoothly.
And it, like I said, I was like, wow, this movie's short, because we're already at the part where they're dancing in front of everybody. I ended up pausing it because I was like, has it already been, an hour and a half? And that is like the 45-minute mark. That is exactly halfway through the movie. And so it's like first half, second half. It is so, I don't know. It's a surprisingly well-done movie.
Structurally sound.
Yeah.
Do you have a least favorite part then? I'm guessing not.
You
know what? My least favorite part is when she yells, "You're wild!" in the car, because that's a little too corny for me.
Well, yes. I will actually say that actually stood out, because I was like, what's the justification for this? Because they're just in the car. Like, he broke the window to get in because he locked his keys in, which is what you would have to do if you wanted, unless you wanted to wait.
To use the car.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're driving in the rain.
Right. Your wild line kind of comes a little out of nowhere, but it's so goofy and 80s that I kind of was like, eh.
And it feels a little bit like it's not scripted that way. They put two takes together.
Yeah.
Or something. And this is where we usually discuss the end, but I think we're just super clear on
the end is how great. I love that, like, also her dad, like, acknowledges her as a human, right, with agency.
Not before her mom goes, sit down.
Sit down, yes. So I love that. Like, he's like, wow.
And it's not that he's henpecked. It's just that she's like, no. And I feel like they trust each other enough to just, like, listen to. Did you know that Kelly Bishop was originally cast as the lecherous lady who winds up sleeping with Robbie?
Really?
Yeah, and the person who's playing the mom got sick, so she moved over, and the lady who plays that lady now was one of the choreographers.
Oh, how funny. Oh, I could see that. I could see her as a choreographer.
But yeah, it's just like, it's all, somehow it's like this huge scene, but it's built up of these great tiny components. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again, like Robbie not just outing himself about the thing, but about who he is, and the dad acknowledging Baby and Johnny as as people. It is very much a question of like, okay, happy ending, but then what, if you think about it for a minute or two. Yeah. But I mean, I could see them staying together, and just like, he becomes a house painter when his knees give out, she becomes a lawyer. People can be happy like that. It's just, you know, she's 18. This is not as likely to be the one.
Well, I think we get the answers in Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, I'm sure. I'm sure they answer all.
No, that's a prequel.
Oh, is it? Do you know, yeah. I heard an interview with Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and he wrote this screenplay about an American girl in Cuba who falls in love with a Cuban revolutionary, and it was meant to be this searing political drama with romance and intrigue, and like about the horrors of revolution and like what it does to the human spirit. And that movie just kept getting passed around and passed around and passed around until it became Dirty Dancing Havana Nights.
That's amazing.
Which is like, of course it did. That's like my one little bit of trivia about that.
That's a prequel. There's a TV movie, and Patrick Swayze was offered a ton of money to be in a sequel, and he was like, no, I don't think it.
Yeah.
I'm glad there isn't like an obvious sequel, but I mean, it would be fun to see it, to have a sequel set maybe now. I don't know if that's like a make it better or something, but what grade do you give this out of 10?
I'm going hard. I loved this movie. I'm giving it a 10. Like I when it ended, I was like, I really like that. And then got ready for bed. I was like brushing my teeth. I was thinking about it. I went to bed. I was thinking about it. I woke up. I was thinking about it. I was like, I guess I really loved that movie.
I'm so glad I could be the one to give you this.
Yeah. And I love, you know what okay, we're going back to the ending though, but this is like, I think what sealed it for me on the 10 is, well, two things. One, that Patrick Swayze has a song in the movie. She's
Which
like
was
the
meant
wind.
For another movie originally.
No way. Oh my God. I love that it's in this. And two, that when he's like, I always dance the last dance. And he puts on this record in 1963 that is so clearly a song from the 80s. Like it is so anachronistic.
And I love the camp director's like, do you have sheet music for this?
Yes. And I like, it's not even trying to sound like a song from the 60s at all. It is purely an 80s song. I love that it like breaks its own world so hard at the end. And that's, I think, when it like locked in that 10 for me. It was like, this movie, it got me.
Yeah, I was going to say this is the movie with the largest divide between critics and audiences, but I think Romy and Michelle might have been similar. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 69% fresh rating from critics, a 90% fresh rating from audiences. It has a 7.0 on IMDb, which I think is a travesty. Because I feel like, again, just genetically, I can't give it anything other than a 10, but also just from like a filmic point of view, it just has so many things.
It's great.
And I think it's super easy to forget that because it has just this like packaging of, you know, capital T, capital M, the movie.
Yeah.
But it's just, it has so many great things. So I think it's a 10 from me too.
So this is our first perfect
double 10
score from both of us.
And it's funny because in my notes under make it better, I'm like, I don't think this can be, you know, it has a sufficient amount of training montage. It could maybe have a little more dancing, but doesn't need it. Again, like,
yeah,
it's good. It could be like 8 minutes longer, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like I don't know. I would say like, all right, if we're talking about fixing, it's not necessarily a fix, but what I would actually really love to see is a version of this same story. Because when you set something in the 60s, for me, you gotta, if you're not addressing the civil rights movement, it's kind of like, why are we in the 60s? Why are we telling this story? A little bit.
Well, I think they kind of do. Like, they talk about, like, it was the last happy summer. Like, she's going off to college. Kennedy hasn't been shot yet.
Yeah.
You know, and like, all of, again, they mention Freedom Riders. Mm-hmm. So we know that, like, this is something that he says to sort of impress her as whatever woke would have been called
right.
in the 60s. He tries to impress her as, like, I'm a conscious guy and this is how you impress an 18-year-old going to Mount Holyoke. But I think part of it is also kind of like, because I think in this world, the civil rights movement wouldn't be acknowledged.
Right.
Because they are in these, like, if not ivory castles, then just in their very privileged bubbles. And, like, we're here to have fun. We're here to have a good time and you know, play lawn bowls.
Yeah. And for me, I think the one thing I would like to see is a version of this story, and there are plenty of other movies that kind of do this, but this story as told through like a different socioeconomic or racial lens, right? Like, mm-hmm. you don't like, it would be a totally different movie, right? But I think that would be an interesting way to kind of counterbalance this, because this is a very wealthy white movie.
I think it's funny that it's been a long discussion where to some people, this is very obviously a very Jewish context, mm-hmm. like with their names and this resort and him at the end talking about his booby.
Yeah.
But that's not apparently not obvious to everyone.
Right.
Something that I find fascinating is something I was reading pointed out that it doesn't explicitly say that it's an abortion. Like, you could miss that if, because they're like, you know, taking care of it. I have to see a doctor.
Right.
Which, like, yes, it feels obvious.
Yep.
Like, she's pregnant and she has to take care of it. But if you could show this to a small kid, maybe not with the sex scenes, maybe like a truncated version.
My sister watched it as a kid. You know, like, I'm sure, I know my wife watched it as a kid. So.
Yeah, I think that just went over. And because, you know, it was illegal and would be illegal for, you know, 10 more years in the U.S.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I noticed this time. Actually, I noticed two things. One is not relevant to this, is that I realized how many of the songs in this movie have the word baby in them, which I'd never reflected on before. But then
the songs are pretty on the nose, end, which is kind of fun, though.
Yeah. The second thing that I realized right at the end is even when they're all dancing, you only see black couples dancing. Mm-hmm. None of the black staffers either dance with white staffers or, like, go up to any of the guests.
Right.
Which, like, that kind of, I think, what you're getting at, where it's like, this is a very specific time and there is more to be told here.
Different versions of this story could be really interesting and intriguing and powerful, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, that's it. Like, for me, though, on The Fix, it would be a different movie that I wouldn't want to erase this movie because I love this movie.
Just a companion piece.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So instead of Havana Nights.
Yeah, anything other than that, because I haven't seen it, but I just assume it's awful.
Me too. So for weird, I realized that this is where I want to bring out my eternal joke about this podcast. It's in space.
Oh my God, that was mine too, because the no gravity and the lifts.
Yes! The no gravity. And then I was like, because they could have different levels of gravity for different parts of the choreography. If you have, like, because I was like, I realized as I was like, ooh, it's like a fancy cruise ship. And then I was like, wait, that's that show Avenue 5 with Hugh Laurie. But, like, because they have still, like, they have, you know, activities directors and blah, 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 and all these. They're on this fancy space cruise ship.
It's a space
ship,
cruise. Yeah,
it's a space cruise. Yes, and they have zero exactly gravity. Mine. But then they have, like, the gravity maker thingy adjuster so that they can have different levels of gravity for different parts of it.
Oh my God, that's so good.
That's so funny. I mean, that or just sticking the marvelous Mrs. Maisel in it, I guess.
Yeah.
But mostly space.
Yeah. That would
I love that we were both like space.
Space, because like thing. How good would all the dancing, like, to me it's if you've seen Ready Player One, there's a whole scene in there where they're kind of dancing in zero G. Mm-hmm. And it's all CG and it's very sci-fi and it's fine, but it's not a movie about dancing, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, here's a dance scene in zero G. As a movie about dancing, if you were to do it, and even if they were to have shot it on one of those, the Vomit Comet that the astronauts use, like with how they shot Apollo 13, where there's actual weightlessness happening, how cool would that be? Or if they just actually went to space. First movie ever shot in space.
That too.
Yeah.
That too. Yeah. Mind meld. Double tens in space. Tens across the board.
I love it.
What did we learn from this movie?
I learned
that you should have already watched this.
I should have already watched this. That is my takeaway.
I learned that there are some movies that you can always rewatch. And without guilty pleasure and without having mm-hmm. to ignore parts of it that you wish weren't there.
Or qualify your enjoyment of it.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, sometimes people say, like, this isn't just good for a lady movie, it's a good movie. And you could say this about Dirty Dancing, but then I'm like, no, it's an amazing lady movie, and that's part of what makes it so amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is powerful. It is about empowerment. Yeah.
Part of me is like, all right, that's it. That's the podcast. Goodbye. We will see you never. But no, we'll be back next week when we'll be talking about Love, Simon. Mm-hmm. You can find our show notes at theincomparable.com chick flick fix. We are chick flick fix on Twitter and Instagram. You can hashtag it. I don't know what you could tell us about Dirty Dancing that's not just like, me too, it's amazing. But feel free to tell us, you too, it's amazing. We'll be back next week. And in your dance space, say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.